My name is Cliff Harwin. I'm the author of Making Sense of Your High Sensitivity, Discover, Develop, and Maximize Your Highly Sensitive Person Traits. I'm also the owner of the Highly Sensitive Person Publishing Company. What I want to do is to introduce my guest, Amy McNeil. Amy and I have been working together for 4 years. She's the producer of my newsletter. We've worked on the newsletter together. In fact, we've done 35 newsletters. We've been working together 4 years. We worked very well together. And the topic tonight is workplace conflict. I've been self-employed for many years. Amy has been working on certain projects. She works for Westfield State University. She does graphic design. She's a copywriter and a part-time wedding photographer. Something where we want to talk about workplace conflict. This is something where I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and also I get many emails about this topic. And it's not only a problem for highly sensitive people, but it seems to be a topic that's really a problem for everyone at this point. Amy, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Cliff.
Okay, hi, Amy. We've been working together for 4 years, and we haven't had that much conflict. The fact that we live about 300 miles away from each other, does that have anything to do with it?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that, you know, we just have a good rapport. You know, sometimes we come across people that, you know, could be in the workplace or just in our lives that we just clash with naturally. You know, it's just that we have a personality conflict with them, and we routinely struggle with, you know, managing those relationships. And then there's other people that you see every day, you work with, and, you know, have around you all the time, and you just, you know, it's a much more comfortable, easier relationship. And I think that's the case with us. So we're lucky in that respect.
We're lucky in that respect, but I think another thing that's very important is the fact that we really respect each other's work style, and the fact that when we do something, we actually give ourselves time to really think and reflect about what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And we don't put undue pressure upon each other to do certain mm-hmm. things. I know that I'm a morning person, and you're an evening person. And mm-hmm. it seems that, you know, people that have conflict with work, I mean, it doesn't work with their natural biological rhythms.
I think there are a lot of reasons for conflict, a lot of opportunities for conflict in the workplace.
Well, a good part of that is, you know, if you're working for someone, there's definitely personality clashes, mm-hmm. and there's different ways of doing things. When you're a boss, you kind of set the tone. When you're an employee, you really have to go by another person's, you know, style, and that could be a problem.
I think one of the challenges with conflict, especially in the workplace, is that it's a little different from, you know, if you're having a conflict with your spouse or your friend. Because when you're in the workplace, especially if the conflict is with your boss or somebody above you, you're really limited as to, you know, ways that you can respond, because you have a lot at stake there. You know, if you are having a fight with your boss, I mean, you could lose your job. So you might be very guarded in what you decide to communicate, and your behavior could be very different than it would be if you were just, you know, having some kind of a disagreement with your friend. I think it makes it more challenging because, you know, you feel that the situation is risky.
It's always been risky, but I think it's more risky now because of the economy being what
right.
it is. And also with companies, they're downsizing, and it seems that people have to do more work with less people.
It's an employer's market right now. I mean, they have the upper hand. I mean, where I work, you know, we put out, just for an administrative position, we put out an ad, and we get, you know, hundreds of people responding, and people that are ridiculously
right.
overqualified, so we can pick and choose. Whereas if you're the employee, you know, you're on the other side of it. You know, you lose that job, you may have a very difficult time.
I think a good part of what we want to talk about on this podcast is, you know, it's easy to say to change your environment, to change your job. But I think that a lot of us are faced with the fact that we need to stay with the job as it is now. And I think
right.
we need to have strategies on how we can best cope with the situation.
Right.
And maybe and be able to cope with it, but also being able to not get so stressed.
Yeah, like survival skills, because leaving a job is always an option, and sometimes it may get to the point where that it just has to go in that direction. But like you're saying, you know, with the economy being the way it is, the first thing to try is to just to try and work the situation out, or at least have enough survival skills so that you can remain in that situation comfortably, or as comfortable as possible, until you actually have something else.
Yeah, I think that the survival skills that you get from the workplace, you can also use in your personal life.
Absolutely.
Because there's always going to be conflict with any kind of situation, whether it be a family relationship, your relationship with your children. I mean, that's always going to be a conflict. So I think a lot of what we're going to be talking about can be used in, you know, personal situations as well. When you apply for a job, I think that you really have to take your personality. You know, it's not just an employer interviewing you. I think that you have to look at it as an interview too, as, you know, can you fit in with the culture of the company and with the person that you're going to work with?
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you spend more time thinking about this, and, you know, maybe you'll prevent getting into a bad situation for yourself if you put more thought into the situation you're getting yourself into.
I agree, but, you know, like we were saying before, sometimes you get into a situation where you just need a job. You just need a job. But I think whenever possible, those are definitely important factors to try and consider. And they're not always that easy to gauge in an interview. Because, you know, usually when people are interviewing you, just like when you're the interviewee, you're kind of on your best behavior.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes it's not always easy to see that ahead of time. But there are clues. Sometimes there can be clues.
What clues would you look for?
Okay, I can give an example of a job interview I was on that kind of gave me a big clue. Was when I interviewed with three different people, and all of those people asked me a lot about how I dealt with conflict. Interesting that we're having this conversation now. How do I deal? Actually, one question was, you know, are you able to handle it when people are yelling and screaming at you? You know, and that was literally an interview question. And if that wasn't a clue, I don't know what was. And
well,
also,
that's something that you don't normally hear from the person that's interviewing you.
Right.
You would normally, you know, that's something that is a telltale sign that could be a problem.
I usually like to meet with, you know, some of the other people that, you know, that I would meet my coworkers too. And sometimes they'll have you interview them. If they don't, I think it's okay to kind of, you know, ask if you can, you know, talk to other people and just, you know, chat with other people. And you can kind of get a feel for things that way, you know. And just even just walking around being introduced, you know, you can kind of just pick up on subtle cues.
Yeah, are there possible times when you can talk privately to some of these people, or is it just, you know, going around and saying hi and just meeting people? Can you actually talk to people privately, maybe before the interview or maybe after the interview? Is that something that can be done?
What I've done, actually, I had a job interview one time, and, you know, you know how they always ask you, is there any other questions that you have or any questions for me? And you can actually say things like, you know, I'd really love to meet the people that I'd be working with, or maybe just sit down and have a little chat with the people I'm working with. And you just say it in a very kind of non-threatening way. If they say no, then you just say, okay, fine, you know. But usually they're very open to that. If they leave you alone, you know, that person may be more upfront with you, especially if they're not really expecting an interview. And you can just kind of like ask them how they like working there and just stuff like that.
The common complaint is that they're asked to do more work than they can possibly do. If you're on a project, the boss doesn't realize how much time that it takes to do a certain project. And I know that you do project work and you work in that kind of situation, Amy. How can you tell your boss that you want to do a good job, but you can't, you know, that you have too many distractions, that you need to concentrate on one task at a time? Is there a diplomatic way to put that?
I think that first step is always going to be, you know, to try to establish a communication, just an open communication with your boss. and just maybe your boss just really doesn't realize all that you're contributing, and very often they don't. I mean, I would suggest have a very clear idea of exactly everything that you're working on and things that you've been accomplishing. And then when you have this conversation with your boss, you just say, look, you know, I've been working on this and that. I want to, you know, and emphasizing that you really want to do the best job that you possibly can do, and you don't want to have to cut corners. And just try to see if you can come up with some kind of a solution around maintaining that balance where, you know, you're fulfilling everything that your boss wants you to do while at the same time you're able to maintain the level of quality that you feel comfortable with.
Just right. It's a matter of setting priorities, too. That's another important.
Prioritizing it, yeah.
Because there's so many different things that can be involved with one project, and it's a question of, okay, which is more important? You can't work at everything all
right.
at once, so maybe you have to break it down into manageable
and
steps.
Your boss for input into that. Say, okay, you know, here's my to-do list. There's 50 things on my to-do list. Maybe you can help me prioritize what's most important. And is there anything on this list that maybe we could either not, that's not important, that doesn't really need to be done, or maybe it can be done later on, or maybe somebody else can pitch in with that. It becomes a negotiation. And that may or may not work. I mean, it really depends. But that's always the first step in any type of conflict, is to make a legitimate effort to, you know, work things out just with, by being honest and open communication and see where that leads. But then if that doesn't work, then you have to move into some other strategies for handling a conflict situation.
If you can establish a good rapport right at the beginning when you first start on the project or first start working for someone, that it's a lot easier to maintain good communication. But it seems that more times than not, in a job, you're first starting a project, the levels of communication aren't as open. So the earlier you can establish the communication, the easier it's going to be to communicate in the future. Okay, if the communication hasn't been good, either at the beginning or, you know, during the project. Amy, do you have a strategy of dealing with difficult people?
I think what happens, and this has definitely happened in my life, and you hear a lot of people talking about this, is that maybe you're in a situation that just probably, it's just not the best fit for you personally. Like, you may be working for a manager that has a certain way that they like to manage people, and then you have a certain way that you prefer to be managed, and there's just a mismatch. Like, for example, and that just gets into personality types. It's a personality conflict. Maybe your boss is somebody who feels like they need to have a lot of control, and they always want to know exactly what everybody's doing and, you know, keeping very close tabs on people. And maybe you're the type of person who prefers to have some autonomy in your work, and you don't really like to be, you know, instead of somebody saying, this is what you need to do and this is exactly how you should do it, you would prefer to just say, okay, this is what you need to do and this is the time that we need it, and then just to let you kind of figure it out. So it's just different people have different ways of working and how they like to work, and sometimes can often create a conflict at work, and it's just something, the type of conflict that just keeps happening over and over. It's like you're butting heads. And then it can get to a point where, you know, you try to communicate with them and then the communication just shuts down on both sides. The communication and the trust just shuts down, and then it becomes, once you get to that point, it becomes very, very difficult, unless you have some really good strategies and survival skills, to move beyond that point to a point where of reconciliation where you can work together.
You definitely need a strategy going in. Okay,
yes.
The person in control is really going to set the rules. Okay, so you just have
right.
to go by that. But there's ways of working with that. And
right.
part of that, the person, you know, the employee, has to really get into the head of the way the other person is thinking. Okay, there are going to be some times when there are going to be some bosses that just browbeat you, where, you know, they put you down because they want to make themselves feel better.
Right, and that's,
okay,
that's kind of what I was talking about, when you get to that point where you're sort of embroiled in conflict, and it's very difficult to get past that without some strategy. And I think one of the most important strategies that you can do in a situation like that, because very often when you're in that kind of situation, you may have a boss that's just angry at you and just will do anything to sort of bother you or to maybe demonstrate their power or their control over you. And one of the most important strategies is that you really have to maintain your self-control, especially in the workplace. You just can't allow yourself to get drawn into another person's issues, another person's anger. And people who are angry are often, you know, they're looking for a response. You know, like I was just saying, they're going to do things to lure you into battle. So the smartest thing you can do is to just not take the bait, to recognize, you know, the situation and what's going on. And you just, even if you have to say it as a, like a mantra to yourself, and I've had to do this before, and say, don't take the bait. You know, I'm being drawn into this. I will not engage. And there's a lot of things that you can say, and types of way, in ways that you can say things that can completely disarm that type of strategy where someone's trying to pull you into a conflict. And you can do it in a way that you sort of protect your own self and you don't allow them to engage you and to upset you and to draw you into it. But this takes practice. This kind of self-control that I'm talking about.
It takes practice. It takes a lot of self-esteem, okay, because if you're feeling, if you feel good about yourself, the criticism is not going to bother you as much. And it seems
right.
that when your self-esteem level is lower, it's going to bother you and it's going to affect you a lot more.
The more you practice that self-control, though, it's like a muscle. It's like a self-control muscle. It's the stronger it's going to become. And that is what is going to help build yourself. Those things feed upon each other. That will help build your self-esteem. Because if you're in a situation and you can maintain self-control, then and not be drawn into things, that you're going to respect yourself more. And that, and self-respect is one of the things that builds and enhances self-esteem. So, yeah, it's helpful once you go into it and you have a lot of self-esteem. It's easier to do it. But even if you don't have a lot of self-esteem, if you force yourself to do this and you really practice doing it, your self-esteem, by definition, is going to build even stronger. It's going to get easier and easier to do that.
And definitely, because it's a lifelong journey to mm-hmm. to build your self-esteem, because you're going to have ebbs and flows with, you know, highs and lows of your self-esteem.
Yeah, and when people are mean to us and we perceive somebody as being mean to us or disrespectful to us, our natural inclination is to respond in like kind. That's like, you know, we're responding from the ego part of ourselves, the lowest part of ourselves. And that's like our default setting. So if someone's mean to me, I'm going to be mean back to them. And that's the thing that causes these conflicts to escalate and to persist. But what most people don't realize is that there's a way to break that. There is a way to break the cycle. And all it really requires is that you have a willingness to see the conflict in a little different way, from a different perspective, and then to shift your response. That's the most important thing, is to shift your response, because you have no control over how somebody else is going to respond. As much as we like to delude ourselves that we can control other people, we can't control anybody else. So the only way to change the situation is to shift your response. That's the only thing you can control.
Right, we can't control that. Another thing, too, if things get out of hand, and, you know, the first reaction that a person would have is they take it personally, as I mentioned before, but also we kind of feel that sometimes it's our fault, and that's where you really have to practice, and you have to have the strategy beforehand, and the natural reaction when somebody comes after you is to defend yourself.
That's a very, very key thing that you just brought up about defending yourself, because even though logically this is going to sound crazy, you know, and I think it did to me when I first heard it, is that the best way to defend yourself is actually to drop your defense. You got to realize that even though you feel like you're under attack when somebody, you know, disagrees with you or they insult you, it's just a trick of the mind. There's no action. We panic, and we truly panic. I mean, I've been in that situation. We've all been there. Somebody's attacking you, and you can actually feel your blood pressure rising. You can feel your heart beating up, your heart quickens, and you can actually almost hear your heart pounding in your own ears. I mean, it's like you're in danger, your body reacting as if you're in danger, and there's no actual danger. And defense is just going to, if you just go into this whole defense mode, you're wasting your energy. And a key thing is that I heard from it was an author and speaker, Byron Katie. She said that defense is the first act of war. So you have to realize that the minute you start to defend yourself, you're inviting more conflict. As soon as you do that, you're just going to continue to invite more conflict. And it may sound like, oh, you know, so I should never defend myself and I should, you know, let people walk all over me.
It's like you're putting gasoline on a fire. It just gets worse.
Right. It doesn't mean that you let people walk all over you or whatever. There are ways, and we can talk about those ways, where you can just deflect things rather than defending yourself. You know, if somebody, for example, let's take an example, if somebody just walks up to you and starts accusing you of something and says, you're a liar, I can't believe you did that, and let's say that you didn't do anything wrong, you feel like you didn't do anything wrong, somebody starts calling you a liar, you know, rather than going into your default setting and explaining all the reasons why you did what you did and this and that and how you're not a liar, and maybe calling them a liar, instead you can just say something like, well, and somebody says, you know, you're a liar, you just say, well, that's not the case, and I'm very sorry that you feel that way. And leave it at that.
But you know what? But that's something that really kind of deflects the anger, because a normal reaction would be to fight fire with fire.
Right.
Okay? You'll probably surprise the person by not reacting in a normal way.
Right. And it can be. And it can be very off-putting for somebody. And another key strategy is to use what I call I-centered language. Now, you stay away from phrases like, you're not listening to me. You know, instead, you would say, you know, I don't feel I'm being heard. You know, so you're still kind of saying the same thing, but you're putting it back on you.
Great. Also, it's very important, Amy, that it's the tone in which you say something.
Well, that's where the self-control is. You have to...
That's where the practice comes in. that's where the self-control is, because it's very easy to get caught into the emotion of it.
Oh, absolutely, but you have to stay centered and stay calm and realize that you're really not in any danger, that's an illusion. And then if you're able to do that, you'll be amazed how you can transform a situation. You know, really be amazed.
Yeah, also, we have to remember, too, that most anger isn't directed towards you. It's something where a person is angry with themselves, and we all have a tendency to take things personally.
Yeah, I think you're right. But a lot of times also when somebody does something to you, okay, and you perceive this as they are doing this to me and to hurt me, but very often it's not so much that they're doing something to hurt you or to injure you in any way. It's they're not acting against you. They're acting for themselves. They're trying to get some benefit for themselves, and it happens to negatively impact you. But they're not necessarily coming after you. They're really acting for themselves rather than
against you. I think that if you can keep your calmness, keep your emotions under check, and also if you're showing a sincere respect for the other person.
Yeah, that's
even though you don't, even though, and that's a tough thing too to remember too. But that's where the strategy comes in, where you can't take it personally, and you have to look into their head a little bit and to try to empathize with them. I think that highly sensitive people can really see, it's very easy for us to see things from another person's perspective, and I think that we need to use that.
Right.
And in that way, we can actually get what we want without having to upset ourselves with it.
Right. Yeah, it's like if you feel like somebody's disrespecting you and you want more respect, you have to be the change that you want to see. You know, so what you need to do, as hard as it may sound, is you need to extend complete respect to them. Because it's very hard to disrespect someone when they are being nothing but completely respectful towards you.
Right.
It's almost impossible. And that would mean that if even somebody's yelling at you, and they could be screaming at you at the top of their lungs, let them finish. And sometimes this is the hardest, you know, Lisa, I know it's a hard one for me, is, you know, somebody's accusing you of all this, and they're yelling at you, and they're really going to town. Don't interrupt them. Just let them go all the way through, almost like they'll start to run out of steam, and really don't offer anything. Because our normal reaction is to interrupt and to try and correct them and to correct their story, but just let them sort of run all the way through until all their steam is off, and then pretty soon they realize you're not responding, and it can be kind of funny because then they'll just kind of keep trying to add things, and they're not sure what else to do or what to add, and then you just kind of let them go and not say a word. You don't have to say anything.
Right. You don't have to feel compelled to say something. Let them say their piece. Another thing, too, you can diffuse the situation by having it, let them say their piece and then say, you know, can we take a 5-minute break? How can you, what is a good way to take a break from the situation and to come back to it and redo it again?
One strategy is, like, let's say you're in a heated discussion with somebody and you know that it's at the point where no matter what you say, they're not going to listen to you and they're not going to, you know, respect what you have to say. And it's the only thing it's going to lead to is a screaming match. So let's say you're in a situation like that and they're asking you, well, you lied, didn't you? Admit it. You lied. You know, and they keep trying to get you to defend yourself, you know.
Right.
Then
that's where you need to take that break.
No, but you can actually do it this way. Well, here's one strategy. You just have to remain calm, and you can just say that, you know, I can see that you're very upset, and, you know, I would be happy to have a dialogue with you about this at some other time. It's just that right now, to be honest with you, I don't feel that I would be heard. I've already explained my story, and I really don't feel that I would be heard, and I think I don't see any benefit to getting into a screaming match with you, and I don't think that's going to move the situation forward, and I don't want to do that. I don't feel right about it. So if you want to discuss it at another time when, you know, maybe when the dust has settled a little bit, I'm more than happy to talk about it, but right now I don't feel right about it because I don't think it's going to benefit you or it's going to benefit me or the situation.
Right. And the tone, okay, and based on what you just said, the tone in which you said it will definitely bring your point across.
Right.
See, and that's where the self-control comes in. Because you're not going to be feeling so calm. But you really need to.
Like I said, yeah, it's very hard to do when somebody is accusing you of all these things that they really aren't true and that you don't agree with. It's very hard to not be drawn into that. But I mean, I've even said things like to people, if they're accusing me of something, I'll just say, well, you know, I'm very sorry that you feel that way. I'm sure that I can imagine how upsetting it would be to believe those things. Or, you know, you're just, whatever you can do to kind of just push the situation away from yourself without having to get into defense mode. Or,
okay, you don't want to be, right, it's true, you don't want to be in a position where you're going to be in defense mode, and you don't want to put the boss on a defense mode either.
Right.
So it really has to be neutralized.
Right, and you can even say things like, you know, if somebody says something about you that's negative, you can say, well, you know, I guess you have a right to your opinion. You know, I'm not here to invest a lot of energy in trying to change your opinion. I mean, you have a right to your opinion. If you think I'm a liar, then you have a right to believe that.
I mentioned before respecting another person's position,
mm-hmm.
and rather than defending what another person is saying, you can say that you're doing the best you can. You really have the best interests of the company at heart. You really want to be productive,
right?
And I'd appreciate anything that you can tell me where I can improve my performance.
Right.
Okay, so this way they're not putting you down. They're going to give you ways of how you can improve yourself. But the fact that you're showing respect and that you want to do, you're really sincere in doing the right job, at least if they feel that you're working with them, it diffuses the situation, but also they will give you a strategy on how you can best do this. And they'll be more open to suggestions that you have. You know, because I'm self-employed, I'm still dealing with people. I'm still dealing with, you know, bosses and things like that. I have to respect the other person's position, and I have to look at it as a way of, I'm in the service business. I want to make their job easier.
Right.
And what I try to emphasize is, I'm here to serve you, and, you know, I can make suggestions. I can, you know, find out what you want, and then we can make suggestions, and, you know, then we can work it out together.
Right.
But that's the normal people. But when you're dealing with a difficult person, you really have to work at it a little more. But the strategy beforehand is really the important thing.
It takes a lot of practice. I mean, sometimes, I know I get in a situation where I kind of know the right thing to do, but it's very hard to put it into practice. And it's just, you just got to keep trying, and you got to keep trying. Sometimes we make mistakes along the way, but eventually you're going to realize, if you do it often enough, how effective that strategy is. And the thing is, the beauty of it is that it protects you. It preserves your peace. And that's the thing that we should be valuing more than anything else in our lives. It's just our sense of peace. And if somebody is attacking you, or somebody you feel is not getting along with you, you have to ask yourself, you know, is this person or this situation, is it worth giving up the thing that's the most precious to me, which is my sense of, you know, peace and happiness? Is this situation worth giving that up? And we don't want to make ourselves victims. You know, we don't want to be a victim. The victim is someone who allows themselves to be held hostage at the effect of what somebody else does or doesn't do, or the outcome of a particular situation. If you're allowing your happiness and your peace be dependent upon some element that you can't control, then you're just asking for trouble. You can't let something else outside of you control how you feel about yourself or how happy you feel. You gotta, you know, that.
Right. We do have to set personal and emotional boundaries.
Yeah.
Where we just have to know that we're not gonna let us get sick. And from another person's standpoint, we're not going to take it. And I think that once we have the respect for ourselves, other people will respect us in kind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, sometimes you get used to acting a certain way. And you mentioned before breaking the cycle, whether it be breaking the cycle in a very combative situation, or breaking the cycle of how we handle things.
Right.
The way to break the cycle is
they're probably going to keep doing what they've always done, and if that's what a cycle is, and you keep doing what you've always done, and you have the same problems over and over, the way to break it is to change your behavior in some way. And that's what's going to change the whole situation. And you may find it very surprising how you can, just with the little subtle changes in your own behavior, how you can turn a whole situation around. You know, I mean, I could even share a story about that, how that happened to me.
You know what, it's really funny how you mentioned that, because I know that this happened a couple of years ago. We had talked about it.
Yeah.
And it really, this is a very good example of what we're talking about.
This happened several years ago. I was in the job market. I was looking for a job, and I had received a job offer. And the job offer that I got was kind of a disappointment. They had a stated, like, salary range, which I thought was low anyway. But then when they offered me the job, they offered me, like, at the bottom level of the salary. So the pay was much lower than I was expecting. And then they didn't have a lot of vacation time. There were a lot of things. And then there was some strange clause about half paying for overtime, I would get half time. So half my pay for overtime. And then, you know, I actually looked into that. I was like, that's the strangest thing. I've never heard of halftime for overtime. I kind of researched that a little bit, and I had discovered that that policy, it's called a flexible work week, was actually illegal for the situation that I was in for a 9-to-5 job. That type of policy was illegal, and it applies more to a flexible work week, like construction or things where you don't know how many hours you're going to be working and pay a certain salary. cetera, et cetera. So anyway, it wasn't even a legal thing, and there was all this stuff about how these companies were implementing this, trying to implement this in a situation that didn't apply to save money on overtime and this whole thing. So anyway, so I thought about the job offer, and I was trying to figure out what to do. I didn't have really anything else going on. So I figured, well, I guess what I can do is I can just attempt to negotiate a more favorable offer for myself. So I called up the hiring manager, and I just kind of explained the situation to him, and I said, you know, that I was interested in the position and that I did feel that the salary, that with my background, my experience, that, you know, I should be at the higher end of their stated range than lower end. And I kind of went into talk about my background and my experience. And then I also asked about the time and a half or the overtime policy. And I didn't say, oh, it's illegal or anything. I just said, you know, normally in these types of positions, I'm used to seeing time and a half. And that's definitely, you know, what I would expect. And then I also asked about vacation, about additional vacation time. So anyway, so I kind of made this counter offer. And then the hiring manager, you know, he said, okay, you know, he wrote everything down. And then he said that he was going to talk to, you know, the other folks there and that he was going to get back to me the next day. Anyway, so the next day comes, it comes and goes, and I don't get any phone call from him, no email, no phone call. So I wait a couple of days, and then finally I just decided, well, now let me call him back, you know. So I call him back, and as soon as he gets this guy, get him on the phone, as soon as this guy gets on the phone, I could immediately tell, you know, there was like a real hostility in his voice the second he got on the phone. And all of a sudden, he just let it loose on me. He says, you know, something like, he's like, well, I'm going to be perfectly blunt with you. And he's like, after talking with my boss about your counter offer and giving it some thought myself, he's, you know, he's like, I have to say, you have a lot of nerve to be asking for so much money and so many things. I don't know who the hell you think you are. He's like, all you have is just a few months experience as an intern, and how dare you, like, how dare you question our overtime policy? That's a benefit to the employee.
That's
and on
right.
top of that, you insulted our vacation policy, and he just went on and on and on. And then finally he said,
excuse
you know,
me, Amy, I just want to stop the story for a second because you brought up, okay, here's the point. The person that you originally spoke to his boss, I'm sure he must have really got yelled at with all the stuff that you were demanding or what he perceived you to be demanding, okay? So because this guy's boss was mad at him, he was taking his anger out on you.
It could be. That could very well be, because he certainly wasn't angry when I first brought
him.
But anyway, so this whole very hostile, he's very hostile, and he's sort of putting all these things out there saying, I only have a couple months experience as an intern. How dare I do this? And then finally at the end, he says, you know, I think that you're just one of those people that's never going to be happy no matter what you get. And I really don't think you would be happy working here. So I'm shocked. You know, I'm like in a state of shock initially, like to get that kind of a response, especially from, you know, sort of a professional person. And I could feel as he was like saying those things, I could feel, you know, my ego was responding, believe me. You know, I could feel
definitely.
My blood pressure was rising, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm in my head refuting all these things. I'm thinking things like, what? A few months experience as an intern? Is this guy crazy? I did have some internships listed on my resume when I was in school, but I also have, you know, all these years, direct years experience in the field, 10-plus years experience in related field. I have multiple college degrees. What is this guy talking about? I mean, and then I'm thinking, just kind of going through the whole, everything he's saying, as he's saying it, I'm thinking, what? I have a lot of nerve. I mean, isn't it standard practice to negotiate a job offer? I mean, is this guy crazy?
Right.
I mean, don't I have a right to ask for fair compensation? And then he went into the whole overtime policy, and I'm thinking, what? A benefit to the employees. That's a joke. I'm like, that's got to be a joke. I mean, this policy is shortchanging everybody. It's illegal. It's not even legal to do.
Right.
You know?
But that was a good tip-off. Okay, all these things were good tip-offs that this was not the right fit for you.
Absolutely. It was. And I have all these things, you know, going through my head as he's kind of saying this. And my inclination, of course, which would be anybody's inclination, was just, you know, I wanted to just, all these things, these defenses that I had just listed, I wanted to just shout those things right back at him. You know, that's what I think most people would do in a situation like that. I mean, I was indignant. But then the very strange thing happened at that point. It was the strangest thing. It was like all of a sudden, and it was very unexpected. You know, I just felt this sense of calm. It was almost like there was like an angel, you know, standing next to me. And I just, it was like instantly, I just felt this complete calm. And then I thought about what I had mentioned earlier about this, the words of Byron Katie, her quote about, you know, defense is the first act of war. Now that just popped into my head. And that means, you know, the minute that you start to defend your position, you're going to just invite more conflict. And then I thought to myself,
But then you're going to be in a position of weakness when you're defending yourself.
Right. And then I also had to just, why do I need to get into a conflict with this person? I mean, what at this stage of the game, like you mentioned before, I already know I'm never going to take this job. You know,
right.
There's no way I would accept a job from this person and work for this company. And this guy actually just did me a huge favor, but he just made my decision very, very easy, a no-brainer. I should be thanking him. I mean, instead of shouting at him, I should be thanking him for letting me know rather than me getting into a situation like that and then needing to leave and, you know, all that. So what I ended up doing, and this was kind of like pretty miraculous, I thought, was I just took a deep breath, and I just calmly replied. I just said, well, you know, just in this tone, I said, you know, based on the response you just gave me, I think that your assumption that I would not be happy working for your company is correct. I think that you're absolutely right. But having said that, you know, I would like to just close this out by, you know, thanking you and the rest of the staff for the time you took, you know, in reviewing my qualifications and interviewing me, and I enjoyed meeting everybody. And this was like a company that was in this old historic building. I like old historic buildings. I must have mentioned that. And they took all this time. I said, I want to thank you for the time that you took to kind of give me the grand tour of the whole place and talk about the history. I said, and I really enjoyed that. And I want to wish you the best in finding the right candidate for your position.
And you killed them with kindness.
Like, basically, it's true. So then after I said this, there's like this big, long pause, like a pregnant pause, and I didn't say anything, and he didn't say anything. And then after this long pause, he just responds to me, but this time his voice, you could just tell his voice, like, it's calmer, and he's just kind of like, well, you know, I want to thank you for the time that you spent, you know, interviewing us, and we really did think a lot of your resume and your portfolio, and I'm sorry things didn't work out, and I wish you the best in your job search. So here it is, just by my behavior, I completely turned the situation around.
He respected you. He respected you because you respected his position, okay?
Exactly.
And then it was a whole, he put you on a different level.
Right, I just brought it to a whole other level, and I could kind of, in his tone of his voice, it was now almost like sheepish and apologetic. I mean, I don't think there's anything that I could have done that would have been more effective. You know, now all of a sudden, he realized what had just happened, you know, what he was dealing with. I mean, if I had defended myself, that's what he was expecting, you know. And the most surprising thing is after this whole exchange, I was not at all upset. And that's the beauty of it. I was not at all upset.
Actually, you know what? You know why you weren't upset? Because you gained more respect for yourself because you handled it. You handled it the right way.
Right. I felt empowered. I had not taken the bait, you know, and I truly saw the power of that. You know, in the past, I'm sure my response would have been very different. You know, I would have responded in the normal way, and I would have, you know, come back at this guy, and, you know, we would have gone back and forth. I would have slammed the phone down. I would have been probably upset for the rest of the day. And I saved myself all of that.
Right.
And I made a conscious choice that I would not surrender my personal peace to this situation.
Well, that's it. You're making a personal choice not to take the bait. Okay, with a typical person, whether it be at home, whether it be on the job, whether it be a coworker, anything, you don't take the bait. Okay, you can let them say their thing, but you shouldn't feel the need to defend yourself.
Yeah, if you see something like lacking in a situation, in that situation, what was lacking was a respectful tone. You see something lacking in a situation, you have to rise yourself to the level where you're offering the very thing that you think is lacking. So I responded in a very respectful way, and then all of a sudden, he had no choice but to respond in a respectful way. So you have to be the change. You have to be the change that you want to be. You have to be it and live it.
And that takes practice.
After that situation, it was just a perfect example of how these things can be put into practice. And you would think that every situation I got into after that, I would be using these same strategies, which wasn't the case. And I thought about that. I'm like, well, I know that it works. I've seen it work.
Right.
Why can't I do this all the time? And it could be, I don't really know, but maybe it could be that maybe in that situation it was a little easier for me because...
Okay, we're going to go back and forth where we're going to handle some situations well.
Right.
And then we're going to go back to our normal way of doing, normal way of handling something by handling it more emotionally rather than handling it logically.
That particular situation, though, it was kind of like, I had no history with this person, and I kind of knew I would never see this person again. I wouldn't have to deal with them again. So maybe that was some of those things. It was just, I wasn't as that invested in the situation.
It would have been different if you were actually in the company.
Right.
And you had to take it, okay? But the point that I think the important point that I want to make on this call is there are ways of handling it without taking it and gaining respect in the process. That's the important point that we want to make.
We think that we have to defend ourselves, and we think that that's the way to preserve our respect and to force other people to respect us. But the truth is, that's the opposite of what you need to do. Is you need to let go of that. And sometimes, it could be defending yourself or it could be being right. We need to be right, and that's going to keep us feeling good about ourselves. But sometimes,
but when you feel you have to be right all the time, it doesn't serve you in any way. It just doesn't. I mean, you can agree to disagree, but it's not a win or lose situation.
And a lot of times you're going to deal. There's so many people that are like that. They just need to be right. So when you get up against that, don't even waste your time.
No, you're not going to get into a shouting match about that.
Right.
It's a question of not being right. It's a question of okay, well, how can we work this out?
Yeah, and sometimes you can just say things like, well, okay, let's agree to disagree on that, or maybe with all due respect. That's another good little phrase to use.
Right,
and you're
going
to disagree with, say, with all due respect, because you don't want them to feel disrespected. You just say, okay, I understand your point of view, but with all due respect, I do see things a little differently. Or if worse comes to worse, another strategy, you can just say, okay, well, you may be right. You're not saying that they are right, or that they could be right, they could be wrong, but they can just say, okay, you could be right. And I've had to use that in situations where that's all they want to do, and I just want to end the situation. I'll just say, okay, well,
you could be right. Or you don't even have to get into that. You don't even have to get into that sometimes. You can just say, how can we rectify the situation?
Right.
You want to take the personalities out of it and get into a logical solution.
You want to attack the problem, not the person. Definitely
That's
you want
it.
To do that.
That's it.
You want to stick to the facts.
Rectify the situation and don't try to make it a he or I battle. I mean, because that's not, it's not going to help anybody at that point. And it's true that, we can talk logically now about it, but then there are going to be circumstances where we just don't handle things right.
Our gut reaction is to just respond with the lowest part of ourselves, with our egos, and it's just, somebody attacks me, I'm going to attack them back. And that's just our gut reaction. That's the default setting. And in order to move away from that, it takes conscious effort. And if you're it takes conscious effort
over a period of time.
Yeah,
because we're not going to be perfect in handling all situations. I think that's a very important point. We're not going to be perfect in all the situations that we're involved in handling things the right way. And sometimes the people that are closest to us, we're not going to be, you know what I mean, we're not going to be as logical, and we're going to be more emotional. So I think that that's something else we have to take into effect too, because sometimes it's easier to get into an emotional, you know, into a battle with, let's say, your relatives. Okay, that's a real tough conflict situation. I mean, you can know all the techniques of how to deal with conflict, and then you deal with your relatives, and then all that stuff goes out the window.
With people that you have a lot of history with, because, you know, and they know somebody like in your family that you've known for a very long time. They've known you your whole life.
Right.
And
they know how to push. They know how to push all of your buttons.
Yeah, they know how to push your buttons, and they can just kind of keep throwing things out, and they know the kind of things that are going to affect you. So they're sort of at an advantage as far as, you know, trying to bait you and lure you into a situation you don't want to be in versus a stranger or somebody who doesn't know you very well.
I think that we brought up a lot of interesting points where you can't get caught up in the battle. You have
right.
to respect the other
engage.
Person's feelings.
You don't engage with the situation.
You don't engage and try to take a break. Try to take a logical break where you can both cool off. And also, you could let the person, you know, get things off their mind and off their chest. Let them diffuse.
It depends on the situation, but you cannot reason with somebody who is extremely angry. You can't introduce reason to somebody in that situation. It's a waste of time. So oftentimes it may be necessary to even walk away from, you know, or just leave the conflict unresolved or come back to it at a different time. I mean, it's very situation dependent, but sometimes if somebody's extremely angry or sometimes if somebody's violent, it may be dangerous for you to continue with that. So you have to just use your best judgment on that. But sometimes you can't resolve a conflict. Sometimes it has to be left unresolved.
Sometimes it has to be left unresolved. Maybe at this particular moment, yes. But if you're working in a work situation where you have to stay, it has to be resolved, but there are ways to do it. And sometimes the person that's getting the attack has to set the tone on how to resolve the problem.
Well, there are also cases, Cliff, where the only resolution in a work environment is for you to leave. I mean, that can happen too.
That's a personal choice.
That should be like a last choice. I mean, that's, you know, I see that as kind of like the last resort.
That's a personal choice. But you know what? You can use, I believe that you can use every situation, good and bad, to your advantage. If the situation is that bad in a work situation, this should give you enough incentive to look for other work. And you're going to learn from every experience that you have, but this is going to give you more incentive to look to change your situation. And that's what we need to make change. Change is difficult. Even though you do need the work, you know, you do want to stay, it's easier to stay there even though the workplace might be miserable. When you look at different parts of your life, the times that you really made the choices, the positive choices, was when there was a conflict situation. You actually motivate yourself through your angst to make the change. So try to work it out. Use it as a springboard to make the change that you really need to make. Amy, I think we've run out of time. This time has gone by very fast. I want to thank you for a very stimulating conversation. I just want to mention that we do have a monthly newsletter. We do have it's a quarterly newsletter. It's called Thoughts for the Thoughtful. And you can go to my website, www.thehighlysensitiveperson.com. If you have any questions, you can email me at cliff@thehighlysensitiveperson.com. And also you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And I post one or two times a day. I post questions and I post my thoughts or whatever. Also, it's very important that we get feedback about what you thought of the podcast. Was it helpful? Also, Amy and I plan to do other podcasts, and we're interested in subject matters that you're interested in. And whatever thoughts or comments that you have, it's very helpful to us, and I appreciate if you can tell other people about this podcast. Okay, so until next time, Amy McNeil, thank you very much. Oh, I do want to mention, too, that Amy has a ebook on my website called the Kicking the Worry Habit. Right, it's on my website, and we'll probably do a podcast on worry, too. Amy and I are also planning on doing teleseminars. And as I said, any comments that you have, any suggestions that you have are just going to be really helpful to us. Amy, any parting words?
I think the key takeaways, I think when dealing with conflict, any type of conflict, whether it's at work or with family, whatever, is to maintain your self-control, to be fair, keep an open mind, drop your defenses. And one thing that we didn't talk about, too, is don't retaliate. You know, sometimes, you know, just resist the urge to retaliate. Never retaliate. And when you want peace in your life, you just conduct yourself in a peaceful manner. And you have to elevate yourself to whatever you think is missing from the situation. You have to be the change. You have to be the change.
Right. And also, don't take personal attacks personally. Because
right.
It normally has nothing to do with you. It's normally of what's going on inside the other person. But just a last thought. We really have the control on how we deal with situations. It's very easy to lose that thought.
Yeah.
But just remember that we do have the control. It takes time. It takes practice. And we learn from every situation, good and bad. Okay, until next time, we're signing out and hope to hear from you soon. Thanks, Amy.
All right. Bye-bye, Cliff.
Bye-bye.